From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. President Trump isn't the first president to avoid science in his State of the Union address, but presidents all the way back to George Washington have made science a significant focus. Hear about the long and varied history of science in presidential speeches. Also, it's no secret that Massachusetts has an affordable housing shortage that could be an impediment to Boston's bid to become home to a second Amazon headquarters. And American meat production is expected to be record high this year. But the kind of meat Americans are eating is changing. And that's healthier for both our bodies and our planet. And every Olympics involves record-breaking performances. How do athletes just keep getting better, faster, stronger? Is there a limit? We start, though, this week with a quick tour of science headlines from the past month. Joining me now is Heidi Ledford. She's a senior biology and medicine reporter with the journal Nature. Heidi, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start with a story that caught my eye because we've actually been dealing with a small oil spill right here in the village of Woods Hole. But there's this, well, we don't actually know if it's a large oil spill or how large it is, in the East China Sea. It kind of has scientists stymied. I mean, it's been more than 2 weeks. And like I said, they still don't even have a really good handle on how much oil is involved. So what are some of the obstacles? Why is this such a challenge?
Yeah, this is one of those stories. It's depressing, but it's also kind of fascinating, I think. So scientists have a lot of experience with oil spills by now, but those past oil spills have typically involved heavier crude. And so we know things about heavier crude. We know that, it's going to form a shimmering slick on the sea surface. We know that it'll sink down into the deep ocean and might stay there for years. But this particular oil spill wasn't heavy crude. Instead, it was something called natural gas condensate. Now, that's much lighter, it's much more volatile, and it doesn't linger as long in the environment. But we really don't know a lot about the short and long-term effects of it.
And presumably this is something that scientists are going to need to learn because natural gas is becoming more and more a part of our energy mix, which unfortunately probably means that these types of spills are likely to become more frequent, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you might imagine so. And there's a lot that they do want to learn from it. But I think right now there's a lot of concerns that there may not be enough follow-up, really, to the oil spill so far. I mean, people are calling for more monitoring of the effects on fish and seabirds and plankton. There's some water quality testing that's going on, but people are concerned that they're not doing enough testing, perhaps, to assess some of the downstream currents to get a sense of how the pollution is being dispersed.
On a different note, the buzz over the past year or two in terms of human biology, I think, has really been focused on gene editing. But suddenly cloning is back in the news. Researchers in China have produced the first cloned primates. Does this mean that we're a big step closer to cloning humans?
Well, that's certainly a concern that has come from this research. There are two long-tailed macaques now in China who've become the first primates to be cloned using a method that was similar to the one that was used to clone Dolly the sheep many years ago. It does, raise concerns among some people that, it could bring us a step closer to human cloning. Certainly no one has announced any intentions to do so far.
We should say it's not like this makes it easy. I mean, it took 109 cloned embryos to get 6 pregnancies and then 2 babies survived birth.
Exactly. Yeah, this is wildly inefficient at this point. It's really not something you would want to do in humans. I think, there's just always the concern that there'll be some clinic somewhere that tries something.
And of course, I kind of posed this as an either or of cloning or genetic editing. But in fact, the researchers who did this cloning say they really kind of have their eye on combining the two for the purpose of drug development for humans.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the possibility of cloning these primates could have a good effect when it comes to drug testing in particular. I mean, you could then use the method to create populations of genetically identical primates that you could use as models for human diseases, for things like cancer and mental disorders, degenerative diseases like Parkinson's. And it is a big advantage to be able to, you may want to use genome editing, for example, to create such a model, but then to be able to create a population that is genetically identical in the end means that you may need to test your potential treatment on fewer animals because you won't have as much sort of background variation due to the genetic differences.
Well, that may be the future of medicine, the future of the human species. Let's think about the long distant past. Some fossils found in Israel recently are kind of changing the storyline regarding the early evolution of humans. It's kind of long been thought that modern humans, Homo sapiens, arose in East Africa about 200,000 years ago, but didn't actually leave Africa and expand out into other parts of the world until maybe as recently as 60,000 years ago. So what's been found in Israel and how much does it change that picture?
So they've found a fragment of an upper jaw and some teeth in a cave in Israel. And those bones are about 180,000 years old. So, you know, as you said, the previous estimates have ranged quite a bit in terms of when we thought that Homo sapiens left East Africa and started moving into Asia. Some of those estimates were as recent as 60,000 years ago. But this finding would place it then at 180,000 years ago.
There's some question, though, about how permanent any habitation in this area was, whether it was maybe kind of a thoroughfare for migration, and how many times early humans left Africa and what that means for the evolution of the species, right? Do we have any more clarity on that, or does this just add more questions to the list?
Well, there's a little bit of clarity, I think, in the sense that there are some stone tools and, you know, other artifacts found from other sites around the Middle East. And this jaw and the teeth here, it's sort of match the dates of some of those other artifacts that have been found. So that lends it a bit of credibility. But in general, yeah, it is a bit of a mess. I mean, they have found fossils here and there that they've said, well, maybe this was a migration, but it might have been a failed migration, so something very temporary. Some of the genome studies that have come out have said, oh, you know, there was one big human migration. Some of the other genome studies that have come out have said, oh, there were multiple waves of migration. So there is a lot of conflicting data out there. I think it's going to take a while to sort through it all.
All right. We've peered into the future. We've taken a look at the past. Let's talk about the present day. President Trump has picked someone to lead the U.S. Geological Survey who, unlike most of this president's nominees for science-related positions, is actually meeting with a fairly positive response from the science community. So tell us about Jim Riley.
Jim Riley is a former astronaut. I think one reason we may be seeing a fairly positive response is because he is remarkable among Trump nominees. I think he is only the second person with a PhD who's been nominated by Trump to lead a major science agency, the other one being Francis Collins, who heads the National Institutes of Health. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's probably also the only nominee who's done five spacewalks as well.
Pretty unique qualifications, but he does have, as you said, that PhD. He was, before he was an astronaut, actually a petroleum exploration geologist.
Yeah, I think with the thresholds where they are these days, I think that, you know, that is quite promising. He's worked in oil and gas exploration, as you say. He's developed some imaging techniques to use in deep water engineering projects. I've also heard that he works well with people. That's always a positive.
That's Heidi Ledford. She is a senior reporter at Nature News. Heidi, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.